hello everybody, and welcome to the Human Values Podcast, episode 12. My name is Javier Payano. I'm a music teacher, character education coach, and someone who loves helping parents build strong relationships with their kids. I'm joined today by my co-host, Luisa Fernanda.
Hello, hello, Javi. Good to be here. Good to be here with you today, have this conversation, and just bring a little light into your day today. I am an integrative nutrition health coach, and I've been working with children for the past almost 10 years now. So it is just incredible how these young minds can really surprise us, how they really absorb. And I just have a passion for speaking about the human values.
Yes, we know the benefit of it. You know, we've done lots of practices over the years, you and I, with meditation, yoga, breath work, all of those beautiful things, and just wanting kids to have what they need to grow up healthy and safe, good mental health, all of those things. It's a beautiful thing we've dedicated ourselves to serving parents and implementing the practice of human values. And today we're talking all about hope. So I'm really excited because this is such a valuable value for us in the community. So I'm excited to dig in. So this is for parents who are doing their best. They're trying to do everything right, still wondering if it's enough. So just to say at the beginning, you're good. You're doing a great job. I always want to applaud
parents. Can we just give a round of applause?
To the parents. Yes. Our unstoppable parents, right? Because there's a lot of parents who've been given up a little bit, and they're just like, or, you know, they're leaning on how they were taught growing up by their parents. And so if you're listening to this podcast, you are already ahead of the game. So yeah, great round of applause for you. That was very warranted and needed. Today, let's start, as we like to, with a grounding exercise. We've been doing the heart high five a lot, and this is another exercise that I love doing with my students in my high school music classroom. This one's called the Havening. So you're going to take your two hands across your chest, starting at your shoulders, and you're just going to rub down from your shoulders past your elbows into your hands and fingers, and then rub back all the way up. And we're doing this for 20 seconds. And the idea here is that you are simulating a hug. Now, the brain doesn't care if it's a real hug from someone else or a hug from yourself. It's still releasing the oxytocin in the brain, the love chemical, the bonding chemical. Mm. And so we're already starting to pay attention to the effects of that in the body. Maybe our breathing is smoother, deeper. And for just a couple more seconds, doing the Havening exercise. And now let's take a deep breath in. And I'll maybe stretch our arms above us to our sides. And I like to say, wiggle your fingers, wiggle your toes, stretch out your arms and legs, stretch in any way that feels good. And let's put back into a relaxed position. Super grateful to do this exercise together. I'm already feeling more relaxed. I'm really excited to talk about hope. I love hope. I need hope. I give hope in all of the ways. So the question to sit with as we get started here is, what was the last time you actually believed, not just hoped, but believed that you were going to be okay? A lot of us are carrying more than we let on. And somewhere along the way, we start confusing hope with wishful thinking. That's what some of us may be thinking, wishful thinking. Like, hope is what you have when you're waiting for someone else to fix it. So tonight we're talking about a different kind of hope, the kind that moves your feet. So there's this element of action, not just kind of sitting around wishful thinking, right? So I just want to tell a brief story about a student of mine who just graduated. So this is a high school ukulele student. It was about a year and a half ago. This student was not doing well. They had been hospitalized for mental health challenges. And then I get an email from the school counselor. Hey, Mr. Payano, we would love for this student. They need a arts credit for second semester. we would put them in ukulele class if that's okay with you. And I'm like, sure, put her in. Because for me, it's like, it's another chance to teach human values to another child. So like, put them in my class, you know? And this is something that's not new to me in my career. You know, there's usually this, like, they know what Mr. Payano's class is like. They know it's a very loving environment. So if they find a student who needs a lot of love, they will reach out. There is this kind of like friction for me, which is like, well, they missed the semester of ukulele. So I have to like, do they know how to play guitar? Do they know how any instruments? So there, that's the very tangible piece that can be a concern, but usually I'll make time after school or do what I gotta do to get them caught up. Ukulele is one of the more accessible musical instruments out there. So, but luckily she's like a great singer and she's very dedicated. She does isolate herself a little bit. So right away she wanted to just sit in the back of the room. And there were at times where she would get up and kind of like walk around. And later on in my career, I discovered that like, no, some students can't sit for 7 hours a day. They need to get up and walk around. So that's kind of become part of my accommodations as an educator, is if a kid needs to move seats or move around, like they're still listening, they're still learning, they're still participating. They just literally need to move their bodies. There's a lot of weird stuff we do in school that's not necessarily good for kids' mental health and their bodies and stuff like that. But yeah, so fast forward, she's getting the value of the week. Every week in my classroom, we're talking about self-compassion, understanding, patience, hope. And, you know, I see her little bit by little bit opening up, becoming more confident. She's doing really great on ukulele. When it comes time for the concert, I'm like, who wants to play drums? And she jumps up and she's like learning to play drums. And then she's in my class. She takes my class for a second year, which was this last year. And now we're getting closer to the concert and she, I say, I need singers who can sing. I think it was Weezer. And she raises her hand to sing. So she ends up being one of the four singers at the concert. She joins my after school club, Unity Club, which is like a rock band club inspired by School of Rock. And all of these amazing things. I can go on and on at her transformation and how she opened up. Well, it's the last day for seniors this year. And I give my little speech at the end. It's like, oh, it's the last day we're all together. So let me tell you how much I love you guys. And you're going to make a big impact in the world. And all you have to do to do that is be yourself, baby. I'm telling them, dude, that's my last message, is like, I love you so much and you're great. And you've got this. You've got this, you know? So I do that and, you know, I'm saying goodbye to seniors as they're walking out their last day. I look to the back of the room and I see this student. She's crying. She's crying and she's like trying to say something, but like can't get the words out. And she goes for a hug and I just like hug her. And she says, Mr. Payano, you saved my life. And you didn't even know that. And so I just like hear that. I hug her tighter and I just go, I know now. Thank you for telling me. And I love you. You know, everything's going to be okay. Have such a great time at graduation. And she just says, thank you, and walks out the door. And that's kind of we talked about a little bit of grief at the end of the year, right? It's like, yeah, I might never see her again. You know, that's real. But those are the moments. Those are the moments that remind you that you're doing a good job. Those are the moments that give you hope. I don't know the whole story and all the details about what she was going through and what she was dealing with. Obviously, there was some suicidal ideation going on there. So I don't know the details, but I know that something that I did in class gave her hope. And I know, Luisa Fernanda, you've been there. I've been there. A lot of people listening to this episode have been there, of just like, what's the point? Nothing's going well. What, like, I should just give up. People would be happier if I wasn't around, blah, 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 blah. This is not the first time in my career that I've had a student say that I saved their life, that I gave them the hope to keep going. And I know it won't be the last. And I know how difficult life is, especially for our preteens and our teens, comparing themselves to other people like it's the school fishbowl. It's, you know, you've got your grades and your GPA and your valedictorians. Like, it's like made for you to compare yourself to other people, you know? So I can see how quickly things can turn for a child and how quickly they can lose hope. And the fact that teaching human values gave this student the hope to keep going, and they made it to the finish line. They made it to high school graduation. I mean, no teacher evaluation can capture that success, right? That's not going to be on my reach assessment as an educator. But to me, I look at that and I say, okay, I did a good job. I did a good job. So, yeah, I'm just grateful that I can tell that story. I'm grateful that I had that experience with that student. And that's something that I look back to and I remember when I'm losing hope and I'm wondering if I'm doing the right thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, that round of applause for you, Abby. Like, you say that story and I'm over here like holding back tears. Just because like immediately what I started to think about was those few, like you're like, I might never see her again, but those few teachers in my upbringing, like I remember this middle school counselor that I had, that this after school program, she would make me feel so safe and seen. And then my, you know, in high school, I remember Mr. Jim, who also like I would go to when I had problems and I could share with him and be honest, and he wouldn't judge me. And I just felt seen and heard. And those people, like, again, we carry them in our hearts, and they are in my heart. So I know that you're going to be, you know, in her heart as she moves forward through the world. Maya Angelou, I feel like, said it best, people won't remember what you said and what you did, but they will remember how you made them feel. And from being in your classroom, she learned what love feels like. And once you have that reference, your soul will continue to magnetize to that, because we as humans want to feel good and loved and be loved and express love. Like, that is truly where we shine the most, when we are in that vibration. Wow. So it is that you talk about it, like, yeah, you know, and it's just, it's so big, it's so much bigger. So thank you just for doing the work that you've been doing. I know that this does take, like, we're friends, so we talk outside these spaces, and I know how these environments put your own body through a lot of heaviness as well. Like you mentioned, at the end of the year, there's a lot of sadness, that letting go, that grief, and the grief builds up in the lungs, right? So we feel it and we express it. So I know that toll it takes on you and your body, and for your will to continue to be there in that environment is just so admirable. And I love thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Queen. I appreciate it so much. And I receive that. I'm receiving it deeply. And you said a word that stood out to me hard, which was they're feeling the love and now they have that as a reference. Whoa. And I don't want to dump on teachers, and I don't want to dump on parents. Everyone is doing the best they can. I don't think a teacher gets into education to be like, I'm going to crush student spirits, right? I don't think parents have kids to be like, I'm going to make my kid insecure. You know, these are just like habits that are in us. And there's like this, like, oh, well, I don't want to say thank you for something the kid should already know how to do or should already be doing. Like, there is this punitive model that we're following in our teaching and in our parenting. So like, I understand it and I get it. And that sometimes the child usually takes everything personal and really internalize everything as negative about myself. If the teacher's mad, if the parent is mad, usually the kid's saying something like, oh, I must be bad. Like, I made them feel bad. That's you know, the level of awareness they have at that moment. So if we're not careful, the message that the child can receive over and over again is, I'm not good enough, or I'm not lovable. It's something that Mr. Rogers talked about. It's like, you are lovable exactly as you are. And when you use the word, they feel the love and they have that as a reference, that really stood out to me. Because for whatever reason in my life, I chose and learned to love hard. I encountered the human values. And for me, that fit exactly what I wanted to be. My behavior is like, I want to show love. And yeah, maybe in the past, that came from an insecure, unhealthy place of, I want to love people because I don't want them to abandon me. I want to make sure, but now that I'm healed and healthy, now I love hard because it feels good too. And the whole year, the whole year, the whole year, I say, I like you as you are. I like you as you are. At the end of every class, I like you as you are. And then at the very end, at the last day with seniors, last day we're all together, I do say, I love you, and I give them that love. And now they have that as a reference, and they can have a reference, a memory of what it feels like to be loved unconditionally, which we don't know. We're not taught how to do that. We're not taught how to love unconditionally. And do I get annoyed when kids are playing hacky sack in the back of the room sometimes? Yes. Do I get annoyed when kids aren't paying attention? Yes. But I still choose to love them unconditionally. And I love how you said that now they have that as a reference. So when they enter relationships, whether it's a work relationship at a job, romantic relationship, friendship, or otherwise, they're going to know what love is supposed to feel like. Thank you so much for bringing that in. I think that's huge.
Of course, and what you were saying earlier about the parents and the teachers, like 100%, it is a byproduct of the modern world that we live in and the modern day stressors and our inability to deal with the amount of stress that we are handling on a day-to-day basis. Like I think most of us are so used to being in high levels of stress that we don't even realize what stress feels like in the body. And it is very hard to love when you're in a state of fight, flight, or fawn, right? You're there in your fear. You're not able to love because you're in fear. You're in worry. You're like, oh, I gotta pay the bills. I gotta do that thing for work. Oh my God, that email, that person that cut me off. And all of that prevents us from tapping into the love. So it's a challenging thing to be in that state of love and openness. And again, us being in a place where we don't take things personally. So when the child, like I work with smaller children, and I work in the ABA field, the applied behavioral analysis. So typically children who are diagnosed with autism. And I work with the early interventions because I do feel that it's easier to see their growth than with high schoolers. It takes a lot longer to reprogram high schoolers than to work with the littles. But sometimes again, like they are just, having aggression, or there isn't any rhyme or reason. And I just sit there and I'm like, if I can just hold them in my awareness of like, I love you just as you are, even when you're trying to aggress against me, even when you're, physically telling me that you're not going to do the put the puzzle away or whatever it is, I'm just going to sit there and love you and hold that and wait. And then just, I feel that since I've started to implement that in my sessions, it is just is magical to me how just me holding that in my awareness again, when I'm feeling that anger or just the frustration of like, I know you can do this, and you're just, and just being like, I love you, just holding that, not being reactive, being calm despite of the outcome, it really can shift that. Because again, right there, what we're doing is tapping into that co-regulation that us adults and children can do. That when we're regulated, when we don't let that, throw us off our game, the child can then experience a little bit more regulation in their own bodies as well.
Yes, no, that's so good. And there's a lot of pressure for both teachers and parents. There's pressure for teachers of like, I gotta teach these kids. And I feel like if a kid starts falling behind in my class, like that's when my fight, flight, freeze, and fawn is activated. I'm like, oh no. And I had to learn to pay attention to that feeling as it comes up and then be like, okay, I'm feeling that feeling. It's okay. The kid's falling behind a little bit in class. That's okay. And I want to remind myself what's the number one important thing here? That kid feels loved, period. Everything else is secondary, and that helps me to calm down. As parents are under extreme pressure to make the child palatable to society, to make the child successful in the world. And if we're not careful, that fear of the child being not successful in the world can supersede the love energetically when you're in the presence of the child. So a lot of times parents get caught in this trap, well-meaning, but it's like, you know, I need my kid to have the best grades. They need to be in sports. They need to be in this and that. And it's like the kid is feeling that fear from the parent. It's like, oh, I'm not good enough. My parent is always trying to improve me or make me better. So that means I'm not good enough. And that's where a lot of even quote unquote gifted kids grow up, and they have anxiety because it's like it was never good enough. Instead of a parent I know saying like, I was like, oh, you got B's and C's. Did you try your best? Yes. Okay, I'm proud of you. You know what I mean? It's just like about reframing what does success look like? Because yeah, the grade might be like a short-term bad grade, but over the course of the child growing up, are they having confidence in themselves? Are they believing in themselves? Are they building that resilience? Are they having hope that they can overcome challenges? And that, I think that if we thought about it and drilled down deep enough, that's what adults really want for the children in their lives, is for them to be confident, to have success. So it's all, a lot of this is reframing what's truly valuable as we're raising our children, right?
Yes. So like, and there was actually a little study done where they've compared children who like were praised with stuff like you're so smart and you're intelligent based on that capacity, and then children who are praised for doing the hard thing and just like, wow, you really push forward. Like those children, the ones who are praised by being smart will always do the easy thing. So that they can continue to get that praise, versus the other child will do the more challenging thing, even though they can fail, because they have that built in their system that they do hard things. And like, I'm excited to get to the thought of the week down here, because it really tunes back into what you were talking about, that resilience.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. And I know this is a common thing. I'm a high school music teacher, so I get the thing of like, if they're not sure they can do it perfectly, they don't even want to attempt it. And I know parents know what I'm talking about. So this, we're now drilling into like, where does that come from? So it's like praising the good job versus praising the good effort. We always want to praise the good effort, right?
There you go.
And that's going to give them hope. Speaking of hope, let's get into the value of the week. So through the lens of right action this week, we're practicing the value of hope. And our thought of the week is, I've got this. Let's say it together. One, two, ready, go.
I've got this.
this to me is super valuable. And I want to give parents the hope that they can continue to build this confidence and feeling of hope in their children by having a short conversation every single week. So this week, whether it's at the dinner table, during a drive, on the trampoline, whatever it is a great opportunity to have a conversation of hope. So there's a conversation starter that we have here is, think of a moment when you surprise yourself, when you handled something you didn't think you could, and what did that teach you about yourself? The practice of education and human values, as we're doing it for parents and parents doing it for their kids, is to start asking the child these questions, because in education and human values, the idea is that there is already wisdom inside of the child. But usually we see children as these empty vessels that we better fill with the knowledge we believe that they need in order to succeed in the world, and completely ignore like, oh, maybe my child has something to say. It's like, I don't care if he's 6 years old. You could be surprised, right? First of all, do you know what hope means? Is a good way to start. And then, yeah, what's a moment that you experienced hope? Where's a moment that you felt hope? And you would be surprised at what comes out. And that's just like pivoting things to say like, oh yeah, my child has wisdom. So we want to start by introducing the value of the week and then say, I've got this, and have that as a mantra that's repeated in the household. Have this initial conversation, and then we can, you know, take the value of the week, the conversation card, we can print it, put it on the fridge somewhere where people are going to see it. And then when we have opportunities throughout the week, and we catch someone saying, it's like, oh man, I don't think if I can do this, or I'm having doubts about this, it's a beautiful thing to be able to say, I've got this, or you've got this. And that's something that has happened so much organically in my classroom, and especially with me, because I've introduced this, I've created this container in the classroom of, we're practicing the value of the week, here's the thought of the week. So then if I go and I say like, oh man, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get this lesson plan done on time, then a child will be like, Mr. Payano, you've got this. And that's, I love that. I love it because they're taking ownership over it. They become one of the teachers. It's not like I'm the teacher teaching you. It's like we're all teaching each other, and we all need reminders, and we build that muscle. We build that resilience. We build that propensity for positive mental health with our children. And I've just seen the impact it's made in my high school students and in the children of the parents that we work with in our program. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. And I love, I just love this thought of the week. I've got this. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I had a friend call me yesterday, an art teacher. She was at the library. She's like, oh, what are you doing after this? Like, I'm just having a hard time. You know, I don't want to do what I'm doing right now, and I want to breathe. And I was like, girl, I can't, I'm not available. But the thought of the week this week is I've got this. So you are right. I sent her the thought after that, and just like a proud of you, you know, little gift. And like, I know it's hard. And then she texted me, and she's like, I did it. And I was like,
yeah,
I'm proud of you for sticking through it, because there's always going to be those difficult things that are going to be challenging to us. I think it doesn't matter, again, how much meditation you do, how much physical work you do, or whatever it is, there always will be, you know, something in your life that will challenge you. That is the duality of this life. You know, it's the up and the down, and being able to understand your capacity to withstand that is really what matters in this lifetime.
I'm reminded of a student where I believe there was something about choosing and choice. This was maybe 4 years ago. And I got done delivering the value of the week and the thought of the week. And afterwards, I get an email, because high schoolers sometimes are more comfortable sending you an email than talking to you in person. That's okay. And she said, Mr. Payano, it was like you were talking directly to me. I was agonizing over the decision of which college to go to. And after hearing the thought of the week and the value of the week, I now have confidence in my choices that I'm going to make the right choice of where to go next. And that was super inspiring to me. And that to me was another example of how the value of the week and the thought of the week gave that child hope and confidence in her own decisions. And it's kind of this interesting thing of like, man, if the negativity isn't so prevalent, it's almost like the automatic way to live is like the negativity and the hopelessness. Luisa Fernanda, we haven't even talked about the state of the world and the state of our country and how we can use hope to help us to stay strong through that. Like, that's a whole other thing, right?
A documentary about the ocean, the state of our ocean. You don't even
The water. The water shortages. Let's not go too deep into it.
You have to have hope. You have to practice hope. You don't have to, but it feels so much better when you walk through life practicing hope. You don't have to do anything that you never want to do, but I give you the invitation to practice it. Just try it out for a little bit. Try it out for a week. See how it feels to not really engage in talking about the negatives and all the bad things that are going on, but only, you know, focusing and bringing light on the good things that are happening, on the things you're grateful for. And then just check in with yourself. See how you feel, because what occurs in those moments is we release chemicals in our bodies. You will be releasing more feel-good hormones than that fear that I believe the modern world wants to keep us locked in. Because when you're in fear, your body is more prone to illness and disease. But when you're in hope and faith and your body feels safe, it recovers, it recharges, it regenerates on its own, because that is what the human body is meant for.
Yes. And that's what we want for our children.
Yes.
right? We want for our children that even when there's challenges in the world, that they know that they have what they need in order to overcome those challenges. So Miriam Kaba, very, very famous author and activist, she had a phrase called, hope is a discipline. So just like courage isn't the absence of fear, it is taking action in the face of fear. Mm-hmm. Hope is not the absence of challenge. Hope is action in the face of challenge. So what we're and sometimes parents can fall in the trap of not being able to withstand the discomfort of their child and will want to rescue the child from the feeling of discomfort because it's so uncomfortable for them. But is a better lesson to allow the child to go through the uncomfortable emotion, but give them hope that this too shall pass. You have the capacity to deal with this powerful emotion and you are going to feel better. Here's the heart high five. Here's the havening exercise. Let's do our breath work together. Let me, with our younger kids, let me wrap you up like a burrito in the blanket, like all of these things that soothe them and help them to overcome the emotion rather what a lot of parents is like, oh, you shouldn't be feeling that, you know? We have that a lot because the parent is so uncomfortable with the child's upset feelings. Like, oh, what are you feeling? No, you shouldn't be feeling that. It's not that bad. It's like, they're feeling it. So it's like, how do we get them like to work with the emotion? And that starts to give them hope with little things. If I can have hope, like I'm feeling bad right now, but I know I'm going to feel better. Let's do these strategies to feel better. They start to develop hope as a discipline, hope as a practice. And then when they're adults and they enter the adult world and they see these real big global challenges, instead of being overwhelmed and taken out emotionally by that emotion of hopelessness, they say, wow, that's a big challenge. What can we do together to solve these problems? It's a way different standpoint energetically.
Yes. Because again, it's not ignoring the problems completely. It's being aware of them to a degree where you're not consumed and sucked in by them. But with just enough awareness that you're like, okay, this is why I got to practice my gratitude. I got to continue to focus on the light. Because the more light that I spread around me, the more lives I can touch and reach with a positive impact, that's going to create a bigger difference in the world. That's going to give me the funds that I need to be able to go handle that situation that really makes me upset. Again, when we have these emotions like anger or frustration, it's usually a lower decibel than passion. So it's, oh, that thing that makes me really angry, it's because I'm really passionate about this other thing over here. So being able to manage our emotions, but what you were saying about the discomfort with parents, that is something that I see in the homes a lot, is just like the desire to, like, stop the crying. Like, but that also usually stems from, like, I work with a lot of families who come from foreign countries. So it's like a lot of these, like, you're not allowed to cry in these other countries. You don't have the permission to feel the emotion. So the parent as a child, you know, or like maybe they did suffer more physical things. And so they're like, well, I had a harder life than you did. But it doesn't come back to the comparison. It just comes back to like, they are feeling this emotion and it's okay. It's part of the human experience to feel that emotion. How can, like you said, come back to that strategy that regulates us? The burrito is an incredible idea and an easier one that, again, if your child is not in the place where they can practice breath work, humming, inviting them to hum a little, to buzz a little bit like a bee, that immediately will activate your parasympathetic nervous system, which will take you out of that fight or flight and into that loving, restoring, repairing, healing side of the body.
That's so good. And thank you for bringing that in of like, yeah, as parents, are we okay with our kids' emotions? Are we okay with our own emotions? That it's okay to cry, that it's okay to feel. Sometimes we got to take a step back, as you and I have been doing this work for years and years and years, and remember, it's like, for some people, emotions is not an easy thing. So we want to step back and, make space for everyone wherever you are on your journey. But the invitation still stands that in order to make the world a better place on the family level, harmony in the family, and as well on the bigger level, global level, I think it all begins with that emotional safety and being able to feel confident and hopeful. If I communicate my feelings, the people around me will understand. For a lot of young people, a lot of teenagers especially, they're feeling so much, but they don't know what they're feeling. They're feeling so powerfully, but they don't know what they're feeling. And it's the scariest thing in the world to admit that or to share that with an adult, especially because we don't know what the adult is going to say. And if in the past that child, broke a vase or something, and then the parent flipped out, what are they going to do when they're experiencing anxiety and depression as a teenager? Probably not going to share it. So that's why this thing about unconditional love, it's not like sunshine and rainbows. It's like, this is literal mental health work that we're doing. And we want, working for 16 years in Chicago public schools, I see a lot of like, oh, the kid's in crisis, now let's get them mental health services. And I think that what we're interested in, you said it, let's get them while we're young, because we want to do preventative mental health work. We want to give them the steps ahead of time to prevent the mental health crisis later. And we can do that as families if we start little by little, just having these small little conversations, and little by little, we're building that emotional intimacy and that emotional safety. So as we wrap up on another amazing episode, I just want to invite people to sign up for the conversation card. This is something that we have been creating for a while now that you can use, whether it's at the Sunday dinner table, or again, while you're driving or you're traveling or whatever it is, you can sit down and there's questions on the conversation card for elementary age students and then for high school age students. It is free. You sign up at humanvaluescollective.org. And that's a way to start having those conversations. And every little conversation, even if we're talking about hope or patience, having those conversations and asking the child the question starts to build that intimacy, so that later on, when they have really big stuff to share with you, that bridge of communication is already built. So sign up for the conversation card. We also have a parent webinar happening very soon. So if you sign up for the conversation card, you'll be among the first people to learn when that webinar goes live. And then we also talked about feeling safe with emotions and feeling, having the capacity to deal with your own emotions and your child's emotions. So Luisa Fernanda, you and I do our Sunday night meditation on Zoom every week, which is another opportunity to just like build that capacity in yourself to deal with your own emotions, and then to be able to be super present and loving while your child is going through their big emotions as well. So all of these amazing free resources we're creating at the Human Values Collective, because we want children to have incredible, not just good, but incredible relationship with their parents. And we believe that that's going to contribute to a better world. Luisa Fernanda, any final words as we get up out of here?
I mean, there's so much that else I could say, but what I really want to come back to is the thought of the week, that I've got this. And just, we were talking about how that builds this thought, practicing this thought throughout the week, throughout the child's life, builds that resilience that we can do hard things. And you mentioned earlier that, if you have one person in your life that believes in you, that makes such a difference in a child's life and in a person's life. If you can Google Lady Gaga saying this, she has like a compilation of interviews where she talks about there could be 99 people in the room and none of them like you, but if there's one person in the room that believes in you, like, you got this. And she says it over and over in thousands of, like, not thousands, but like hundreds of interviews that I've seen. And what I always like to bring to that point is that that person in the room doesn't need to be anyone else. It can be yourself. You can be the person in the room that believes in you at all times. And it's so beautiful when we do have people around us that are those mirrors to us. Like, I believe in Javi. I believe in the human values. I believe in myself. That's amazing. But we can always be that light for ourselves that knows that we are capable. So just continuing to practice this, and always permission to the parent, invitation for the parents, and permission to mess up. It's not perfect. We mess up, and there's times where we, you know, do the wrong things, but just coming back, not getting stuck in the shame or the, oh, I didn't do it right. There isn't a right or wrong as long as you come back to trying again.
Yeah, this is a lifelong practice, but it's so worth it. It's like the most valuable thing you can do is teach human values. And people are doing that naturally. You great teachers, great parents, they're naturally doing it. But I think what we're doing is we're building a system and we're delivering it to you every week so you don't have to think about it. And we're making it more intentional, more specific, more strategic, more systematic. And you know, if the negative influences are out there everywhere, online, on social media, on the TV, in our media, I believe so must our message of human values and connection and humanity and forgiveness and understanding and unconditional love must also be as systematic and as constant. So keep broadcasting that radio signal and wait for the miracle to happen. Thank you for that final word, Luisa Fernanda. I'm inspired. I've got hope. I've got this. We've got this.
We've got this.
And we're so grateful for our community.
You've got this.
You've got this. Please share this episode if it inspired you, if it gave you hope, with a teacher or a parent or someone who works with kids so that we can get as many people teaching human values to the children as possible. And we'll end by saying, you've made today an amazing day just by you being you. There's no one like you in the whole world, and I like you
just the way you are.
See you next time, everyone. Bye.
Bye.